Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour. Here, Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, this fella doing the talking, and we have ourselves another fantastic show ahead for you. And we have a guest today who's going to be talking about bravery. She's a bravery expert.
She sure is. She's brilliant, smart, tough cookie, Jill Shulman. She's a former member of the United States Marine Corps, and she has just released a book called The Bravery Effect, a parable teaching the science of conquering fear, achieving more, and living life to the fullest. So she's a bravery expert, and she's written her book in the form of a parable. You follow a character. It's not a super long read. It's very meaningful. It reminds me, John, do you remember the book The Go-Giver? Jeannie Kelly was always a big fan of that book. Yeah, so you kind of follow this person through, and they meet with three different people and learn stuff. And it's really fascinating, because if you struggle with, if you feel like you're playing small, if you feel like you're stuck, if you feel like you don't have as much confidence as you would like, there may be a simpler fix to it than you think. And she says bravery isn't something you're born with. It's something like when you go and you work, like Jonna, your arms look fantastic. You work out consistently. Your arms look gorgeous. Well, the first time you started working out your arms, you couldn't do much, but you kept practicing, kept working, and now you can do more and more. And she says honing growing our bravery is the same way. So I'm loving her book and super excited to talk to her after the first break.
That's great. You know what kind of badass you got to be a chick
in the Marine Corps.
Man. So she's got my respect already.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm sure I could use some, pointers, because, you know, I tend to hide under my covers a lot. So maybe I'll learn something from her today.
Well, figuratively speaking, Frankenberry, a lot of people hide under their covers, figuratively speaking. You're not alone. So I can't wait till we talk to her.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hold on. I can't hear you. I'm under the covers.
Wait, do I sound muffled? Can I do the rest of the show from over there?
Why are you so muffled?
Wake up! Did you just snore?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, yes. The book is really, really good. I'm excited to talk to her. Finding it helpful already, yeah.
Oh, very cool, very cool. So I'll let the listeners know that when Jonna hopped on first here with me, she made the mistake of saying that her face hurt. And of course, that made me immediately think of, yeah, well, it's killing me.
You can't ever say that about Jonna, though.
Yeah. Yes, but now, Jonna, you need to explain to us here what it is that you feel is happening, because your head's kind of lopsided.
You said I smiled and my face hurt.
I said, uh-oh. Yes.
Yeah.
I know. You guys would think that, oh, no, she's going to stop smiling altogether if she smiled and her face hurt. What could that possibly be? But I think the reason why I smiled and my face hurt is because I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but despite my current situation, I have had a lifelong allergy to cats.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? Like some folks say, listen, if you got a fear, you just have to face it. Well, you know what? You have gone tenfold. You have taken the extra step in that regard there, if it comes to facing that fear of being allergic to cats.
You should have saved that for our Sagu. Yes, but you are actually right. But can I just tell you, because I don't know if I've shared this, like my allergy in the past has been so bad that there was a time, so I just immediately, I couldn't be around cats at all, but there was a time in my life when I was dating a guy who I'm still in contact with, although he's married, he's now a judge. We were lawyers together in San Diego, and he was a little bit older than me, a lot older than me. But anyway, we were dating, and he lived in this fabulous condo, this high-rise condo overlooking the bay, blah, blah. Anywho, he had four cats. So every single time without fail that I went to his condo, I would begin to wheeze within moments of walking through the door. But because we were dating and I had to pretend I was hot stuff, I would suppress this allergic reaction, waiting to go into anaphylactic shock, as if that were going to be somehow sexier than trying to not let him hear me go when I was just walking around the apartment.
He thought you were really hot for him.
Right? Are you hot for me? Or wait, is that anaphylactic shock, or are you just happy to see me? So it was really bad. But since then, maybe because, you know, I don't know, allergies are a hyper immune and autoimmune reaction. Maybe you can cure yourself of allergies if you just stick your whole face in whatever it is that makes you allergic all the time. And then your body goes, all right, fine, you win. I'm good. We're good. But,
well, you've certainly done that.
I know. But now maybe a little bit, it's coming around to bite me a little bit because I smiled and my face hurt and I'm stuffed up on that side of my face, that side of it.
What do you mean that side?
So it's the right side. If I smile, the right side of my face hurts and the right side of my face, AKA nose, is stuffed up.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Right. So there you go. Bob's your uncle. I'm having a sinus thing. I mean, clearly, you know.
Surely.
But one side.
On one side. Okay. Just one side. Yes.
So does that mean you turn your head?
She's only half allergic.
You just turn your head a little bit to the left then when you're on the TV?
Well, I mean, thank God it's only one side or I wouldn't be able to breathe at all. So, you know, there is a God, right? Keeping one nostril open. How else am I going to breathe? Through my mouth, like you, Frankenberry?
I have been called a mouth breather. So, yeah.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I'm having a little cat reaction. And that reminds me of another thing that I learned. Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I play one every day of my life. And I am finding that when I touch, as everybody knows, I have 2.5-week-old kittens living under my couch in my living room. Long story. Go back to a previous show. You'll learn all about it. But these are the newest cats that I've ever handled in my life. And when I touch them or handle them, I'm back in my San Diego days. Like, I'm more allergic to these newbies than I am to any of the existing cats. So there must be something about a newborn kitten that is triggering extra histamines. And that, I think, is also contributing to my face hurting.
I have a theory.
You have a theory? What is it? Tell me.
You don't normally let these cats lick you or they choose not to lick you, but the mother is constantly licking and grooming them.
Oh.
So her saliva is on them and you handle them. I bet it has something to do with that.
I'll take that
for the win.
Are so smart.
And it also might have something to do with the fact that you've had time to grow accustomed to all the others. They've spent more time with you. This is brand spanking.
Brand spanking, right? So we need to adjust to each other. I like this theory. I mean, I don't like that I'm extra allergic, but this absolutely makes sense.
It does.
Absolutely. Yeah. Positive.
So I'm just...
So get some gloves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all.
Which I
John
do
is
have.
Going to send us a picture, like an AI built picture of her in a hazmat suit, holding a kitten
with oven mitts.
Yeah. Have you kissed them?
No, I have not. Okay. I have not kissed them.
Well, that's because they're ugly.
Are they still ugly?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Since you asked, two of them are getting moderately cute, and there's one real Ugmo in the bunch. Just real Ugmo. Like, I don't know.
Real Ugmo.
is that the one that you texted us the photo of Grandpa from the Munsters? Said this cat looks like this one.
Ironically, I believe it or not, as ugly as that kitten is, I think that's one of the two cuter ones. An ugly bunch. They all look like they need toupees. I mean, they're all, I don't know. But I mean, just like a human baby, right? Human babies.
Can I say it?
Can I say it?
I don't know.
Human babies aren't
aren't
all that cute all the time, and then they can grow up to be, you know, beautiful people. Maybe it's the same in cat world. I'm not used to this. I've never been around any animal this young. So there's hope. But I will say, you know, I just kind of had some piecemeal things to complain about. And one of them is I do, just speaking of taking care of these cats and what my life has been like for the last 2.5 weeks, I want to really give a shout out to every person within the sound of our voice who is an actual mother of human beings. If you are a mother of human beings, my hat goes off to you. If I ever encounter you on public transportation, you can have my seat. If we ever encounter each other in a grocery store, which won't happen because I don't do them, but if I ever did, you are entitled to get in front of me in line. I will pave the way with rose petals. I have a newfound appreciation for any person who's ever raised a human being. Why? Well, because I never have, but because I am now taking care of these brand spanking new animals, I don't know how parents do that with humans, which is going to be a million times harder and different, and still manage to make themselves look good, get to work, put food on the table, mow the lawn, take care of the other kids, take care of their pets, and do all the things that life demands of us while raising children. It is a feat beyond feat. Because I know that when I get up in the morning now, in the first 90 minutes, yes, it takes 90 minutes to get all of these cats, make sure they're alive, make sure they're fed inside, outside, make sure I'm not tripping over them, stepping on them, killing them, make sure they have a place to go to the bathroom and do all that, then suck down a cup of coffee before getting myself ready, going to work, coming home and doing that whole freaking routine all over again before I fall out in bed asleep until 3 o'clock in the morning when I wake up and can't go back to sleep. Let me just tell you, I'm just going to tell you this. This is gross and I'm going to admit it on the air. I am right now, for the first time in my life, wearing the exact same outfit today that I wore yesterday. Yeah, that's right.
At your office?
To my office. I had court yesterday, fortunate, but I did the math. I did not have time, you guys. I had a very early appointment this morning. I'm like, well, I cannot figure out what to put on my body. Yesterday, this skirt and this shirt worked. You know what? I'm putting it on again because I have to go to court in a different court, so they won't know. And I said to myself, nobody in this office pays any attention to me. If I walk in here in the same outfit, they're not going to go, oh my God, the boss is wearing the same thing as yesterday. I just needed to not have to make a decision, number one, and I needed something fast, number two. And imagine if you're a real parent of real humans, how often that kind of decision must befall you. Is that a word? Befall?
So you said you get up every morning and it takes you 90 minutes to take care of all of these cats. How many?
She's trying.
You know what? And every try, Frankenberry, every try gets a little bit better. Did you notice her tone of voice as if she had never inquired before?
I wanted to commend her on that because I know, I'm sure that Carol thought about that. I'm gonna throw this out there like it's mm-hmm. a first time ask.
Yeah.
Let me just remind you of something. Your mother mm-hmm. and me are besties.
I know.
And we text each other all the time. She knows. I knew how to get in your house, but I don't remember the code at the moment. But I could say, Mom and Nance, I think we have an issue here. Would you meet me over there while we know she's in court or something?
Oh.
Bring a pad and pencil.
No.
She's like a double agent.
You would.
Let's count them. You know what? She would do it.
She would do it.
She would.
Double crosser. Speaking of doing it.
And wait, before we continue.
Okay.
And it would require one of those, when you got so many things to count that it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 vertical lines and a 5 slash.
Oh, yeah,
1, 2, 3, 4 and a sideways slash 5. That's how we'd have to count. Anyway, go ahead.
What are those things called?
I don't know.
We should know this. What are they called?
No clue.
We're going to look that up. We're going to chat GPT that. So, okay. So speaking of cats and this show, I love. So we have a good friend named Deborah Hanlon. She's been a guest on this show numerous times, but she's a very good friend of ours. And last week when we were talking about the cat problem, because that's all we talk about lately, because it is a problem. We had mentioned that I was going to ding dong dash a cat to Deb Hanlon, because you're like, oh, yep. Deb Hanlon, why don't you give her a cat? I'm like, yeah, great.
Right.
Ding dong dash. So we got outed because somebody listening to the show, who also knows Deb Hanlon, she's very popular, contacted Deb. And Deb texted me to call me out. Now, here's the fun part.
For some reason, when we lower our voice on air, I feel like it doesn't, like nobody hears us.
Oh, exactly. It's like going into the sitcom kitchen.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. But they do. Go ahead.
But they hear us. And here's the funny. So there's a very Deb thing that goes along with this story. So she texts me and she outs me and she's like, you know, somebody listening to your show contacted me, said you're going to ding dong dash me a kitten. And she said, how about we do it civilly with wine? LOL. And I'm aww, like, I'm like, I hate when I get caught before my caper. No. So anyway, while she's texting me that, a moment earlier, I was sitting on my deck with a glass of wine and a bee tried to drown itself in the wine. When I wasn't looking, a bee got in there, and I posted that picture on Facebook. And she said, by the way, that bee in your wine, did you know that Deborah means bee in Hebrew? It was me saying hi. You're welcome. Isn't that spooky, scary, cool?
That's funny.
That is spooky, scary, cool.
I know somebody who had a bee flying to their drink and didn't know it, and they took a swig, got stung on the inside of their throat.
Yeah, that would scare the crap out of me. And I can imagine that happens quite a lot if you're not paying attention or if you don't have a clear glass of whatever you're drinking. But it doesn't beat the time, this is a long time ago, and I told you guys this and I posted it on Facebook too, when I had a glass of wine out on the table on the deck and a bird, thank God I was sitting there when it happened, flew by and swear to God, you could not have, if it had been a drone and you had the coordinates, how to cleanly, immaculately relieve yourself in my wine glass from 30 feet over my head without touching any part of the glass. It couldn't have been done. But this bird, nothing but net. Boom.
Wow.
I'm sitting there. Yep. And it was boop. Nice. And it went right in. And, you know, obviously I had to dispose of everything. But could you imagine if I had like gone in the house to use the restroom or something, come back out, picked it up because there was no evidence whatsoever on the glass? I would have died at that. I would have taken myself to the hospital.
I just want to give that bird a high wing. You know what I mean? A high five wing. Seriously, that bird's got like a bunch of other birds and they all do like trick basketball shots together and they throw them on YouTube. Nicely done, bird.
It was incredible and not fun.
Have you ever had a bird poop on your head?
Yes, it's good luck. And put not just on my head, on my arms and my head.
I've always loved
that. Was that your days in San Diego?
Yeah. And people say it's good luck only because they have nothing else to say about it. Well, let's just say it was good luck. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
No, Bill,
let's turn this into a positive.
That's right. You've got crap on your head, Bill. No, but that's good luck. You didn't know that? You just made that up, Bill. No, I didn't.
So true. But yeah. It is supposed to be good luck. Well, it doesn't happen very often.
No, you just have to brave your way through poop on your head.
Wow.
I'm just looking at the clock.
Curly.
Did you segue us?
He stole your thunder. He totally segued us. You just have to brave your way through it.
That's right. Through poop on your head. That's it.
Wow. Yes. Wow. Okay.
Go grab a paper towel.
Our guest this week is Jill Shulman. She's a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, keynote speaker, and expert in the science of bravery. And she'll be joining us to talk to us about her book, brand new book, The Bravery Effect, a parable teaching the science of conquering fear, achieving more, and living life to the fullest. I'm totally enjoying this book, and I'm very excited to talk to her.
All right, that is what's on the way. You've got Jonas Spilvor, you've got Carol Pesci, you've got this guy, and we will be back with Jill Shulman. Please come back with us.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour. Jonna Spilbar, Carol Pesci, this guy. And we have time now to sit back and enjoy a guest that, Carol, I know you said you're about two-thirds of the way through her book and you're enjoying the heck out of it. And she's going to teach us, like me, for instance, how to stop hiding under the covers, how to be brave.
She sure is. And we have on the line with us a bona fide badass. We have Jill Shulman. She is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, keynote speaker, and expert in the science of bravery. With a master's in applied positive psychology, the science of happiness and well-being, she combines evidence-based research with real-world experience to help individuals and teams embrace courage, push limits, and achieve greater performance and well-being. Her newest book, just launched, The Science of Bravery, provides practical tools for developing a courageous mindset, taking bold actions, and building brave relationships. She's since changed the title of her book since that bio. It is actually called The Bravery Effect, which I love, a parable teaching the science of conquering fear, achieving more, and living life to the fullest. I am getting so much out of this book already. Jill, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I'm so excited that you're reading it. And you said, ooh, I'm in your head. So the book is doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
Well, that was supposed to be just between us, but that's okay. No. 100%. 100%. And I have a suspicion. I'm going to ask you a question in a little bit. But where I would love to start, Jill, I kind of have like a two-part question that it don't totally go together, but I don't want to forget to ask. One is, what's the backstory? What made you want to write this book? And I would love for you to share the story of your first day showing up for the Marine Corps and your connection to a character that I know Jonna loves in movies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I will tell that story too. Well, you know, my motivation for writing this book, I think it really came to me when I was studying positive psychology at Penn, you know, and you guys know what that is. I mean, literally, there's a scientific study of how to elevate your happiness and well-being. And as I was studying this, I realized the blocker for so many people to live their best life was fear. Fear holds people back. It keeps them small. It prevents them from living the life that they want. So I became obsessed with, what is it about fear? Why does it control us? And how do you overcome it? And that's how I stumbled upon bravery. And it was kind of consistent with, I guess, my brand, starting off my career as a Marine. And I see so many speakers, because I'm a keynote speaker, right? But I see so many motivational speakers just say, like, look at me, I climbed a mountain, don't be a wimp, go out and do it. And honestly, that doesn't help people. Mm-hmm. Just to say, look at how tough I am and you be tough like me. I am really interested in, how do you actually build the capacity of bravery to help people overcome their fears? And I want to do it in that evidence-based way. And anyone can be brave. So that's what I'm on a mission to do. And a secret motivation too is I see the world sometimes through my kids. I have two teenage daughters, actually one just turned 20. So one 18, one 20. And even looking at my daughters, like, so many times fear, you know, keeps them from going out and socializing or doing the things that they want to do. So, and I feel like our world, especially our younger generation, they think that the path to the happiest life is just a life of comfort and ease, and they don't want any challenges and they just don't want any discomfort, and then my life will be really happy. And that's just not the truth. The opposite is the truth. If you want a great life, you have to do really hard things and it requires bravery. So that's my why. Yeah. And the story. You want the story? Okay. Yeah. The story. I know.
So I'm going to love this.
So I was growing up in a small town in Minnesota. I had a great childhood, loving family. I had an example, though, I think, of my parents, of what I didn't want, which is, they both had jobs that weren't super inspiring. They were jobs that they did just for the money, and they weren't really inspired by it. So, like, I had this little inkling, and part of it is because my grandfather was a United States Marine. I'm like, I want to do something with purpose. I want to become a United States Marine. So I applied for a full ride on the Marine Corps. So there's these things called Reserve Officer Training Corps ROTC scholarships. So I applied and got a full ride on the Marine Corps to go to school. And so I'm 18 years old. I'm getting on a plane to head from small town Minnesota, where the only thing I had seen about California was what I saw on television, and it looked pretty darn cool. And I was so excited. I'm getting on the plane, headed out to San Diego, California, to report in to my ROTC unit, Naval ROTC, Marine Corps option. And I put a lot of thought into my outfit, because I wanted to make a really good impression. Right. And I did my research, and apparently if you're going to be an officer, jeans are not okay. And I'm a kid. You're like, you don't wear jeans. Like, okay, I can't wear jeans. And I'm like, I don't want to wear a dress because that's too girly. So I found the perfect outfit. There were these silk shorts that went down to almost my knees, and they were hot pink with white polka dots. Ooh, and then I had the perfect like little heels, like little pumps to match. And even my nails were the exact same shade. That is the way I looked as I reported into my Marine Corps unit. Do you have an image?
Donna, who does she make you think of?
Hey, I love it.
Well, and from a movie, who you love? Elle from Legally Blonde.
Oh my God. Totally.
Exactly.
Yeah, I really look like a stunt double of Elle in Legally Blonde. So imagine that, and then imagine anything that you've seen in the movies about Marine Corps, you know, life or boot camp. And that was my beginning. So I reported in, and it's actually interesting. Naval ROTC, it's all the Navy people and the Marine, because we're both Department of the Navy. And all the other women like are reporting in, and they are going left, which is the Navy side. And I'm the one going right. There was like almost no females going to the right. There were two, the other one quit after the beginning.
Oh my God.
And that first day it's like they were just salivating when I was walking over going, oh, we're going to have fun with this one. And, you know, on that first day, one of the senior Marines that I looked up to the most, he had like the chiseled jaw. He just looked like, you know, badass Marine. I was like, wow, I love this. He actually walked up to me and he actually leaned over and whispered, "You'll never make it as a Marine."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think this is part of what I end up teaching in the book is I had to make a decision there, right? That first day, like I could have gone back to Minnesota. Like I mean, where it's comfortable and I could, you know, go to school back there, but I had to make a choice. Do I move forward into this environment where they're going to challenge? It's not going to be easy. It's going to be uncomfortable. So that's a step forward, which is what I call a brave. Bravery is taking action in the presence of fear to a worthwhile or noble goal. Do I take a step forward, even though it's scary as hell, or do I retreat into safety? So that day I was there. Next day it got worse. It literally got where you're like, how could it get any worse? It got worse because I realized that running in Minnesota where it's flat is different than running in Southern California.
And the sand.
Yeah. The sand and the hills. And I couldn't keep up to the pace of, they're almost all males. And most of the Marines in my unit were actually prior enlisted, because in college you can become an officer by going through ROTC. So I was a student that would become a Marine, but there's a lot of other Marines that were enlisted first. They were enlisted first, but they were such great enlisted Marines. They were told you can go to college. So most of the students were like, they'd already been Marines for 4 to 6 years and they were top Marines. And then there's
me.
Oh
my goodness.
And a lot of other, and I couldn't keep up. And it is very shameful in the Marine Corps if you're not physically as tough as anyone else. So I had some moments where I'm like, was he right? Am I going to make it? But I just, I kept showing up. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. Someone's listening right now. What is the toll on a person for not practicing bravery? What happens to their experience of life if you don't exercise that?
Oh, it's so dangerous. If someone allows fear to control their action. So if I would have flown back to Minnesota, I would have felt regret. My self-confidence and my self-efficacy would have been diminished. So when people decide to cower, which is the opposite of bravery, to allow fear to control their actions, even though they want to do the thing, right? And everything is telling them, like, I want to accomplish this. But if they allow fear to control them, then that makes them smaller. It decreases their self-confidence. It decreases their self-efficacy. It decreases their agency. And they go in a downward spiral and they become weaker and more fragile. So when we seek safety over bravery, right, it actually causes people to have more anxiety, more depression. So this is why I'm on this mission with bravery. Like, I want people to run toward what they are scared of when it's in the way of what they want. Because if they keep running away from what's uncomfortable, what they fear, it's going to lead them into a life of regret or a life of just, you know, of maybe it could lead you to a life of mediocrity. If people want a life of mediocrity, then just keep running away from what you fear, and your life might be just okay, or it might be not great. But if you want a life that's fantastic, that's a life that is full, you got to face your fears and overcome them.
Like, do you know the analogy when I was sorry, Jonna, when we were in the first section introducing you, Jonna is gorgeous and she's in amazing shape. Her arms look phenomenal, and she but it wasn't always that way. What I have loved that I learned from your book already, for anyone can benefit from this, is bravery isn't something you're necessarily born with or raised with. Some people are, and that's wonderful. Bravery is something you grow and practice, like Jonna has with her arms. Her arms look fantastic because she couldn't always. And your main character in the story, how he does his pull-ups, and he's like, "No, I could never do that." And then he learns to end that sentence with "yet," and he keeps pushing himself and pushing himself. So for anybody listening who feels your description of playing small, of the anxiety, the depression, the life of mediocrity or worse, and is still even afraid of stepping outside of the comfort zone, it's something you can practice and grow just as you could physical fitness.
That's such a great analogy. You're absolutely right. Anyone, I just want everyone to listen, hear this. Like, you can build your bravery to overcome your fears. Anyone can do it. And I'm not just saying that as, oh, I'm a badass Marine, like, look at what I did. I'm saying this with absolute scientific certainty because it's been proven. That's my background in psychology. And I just want to, sh can I just share one thing to convince your audience? This comes from Albert Bandura's research on self-efficacy. So he's a famous psychologist, did like seminal work in this discovery. And what he discovered is, in order to build self-confidence, you don't wait until you feel confident and ready and then do the thing. He's like, the only way you build self-confidence is you take a step and you don't feel ready. And then the step makes you feel like, oh, okay, that wasn't so bad. And he's got this famous study where he was helping people overcome a fear that was paralyzing them. And it was a fear of snakes. So I promise this is a great study to talk about, and I'll get to the point in a moment. But if you use that as an analogy, like, everyone has a fear. So in this case, it was a fear of snakes. So instead of just telling people like, oh, fear, like, snakes are not dangerous, and you shouldn't be afraid of snakes, instead of talking about it, he simply gave them steps. He made them look at a picture of a snake, which made them uncomfortable. And then he made them watch a video of snakes. And then he brought a snake in the room in the far side. And then he brought it closer. And then the aquarium was even closer. And then he took it out of the aquarium. And then he had it in his hands and he sat next to him. Eventually they touched the snake. Eventually they held the snake. So what we know is, building your bravery, it just takes little steps. We're not going to take one of those people and throw them into a pit of snakes. That is too much too fast. It starts small, just like Jonna's muscles in her arms. She didn't just go and lift really heavy and then the next day she had these great biceps. She had to be consistent and take little steps. So for anyone that, you know, maybe they feel like, oh gosh, I'm just not brave at all. Like, they can't even, like, you know, maybe they're afraid of speaking up in a meeting. So for them, it might just be the first step is to raise their hand and share one idea this week. You know, you just got to start small. So anyone can build it. And when you look at the brain, the neurology is so fascinating, because when you take the brave step, just like Jonna's body is like, oh gosh, my arms are, like, really sore. I better make that bicep stronger for the next time she tries to lift something heavy. The same thing happens in our brains. So the different parts of our brain change as a result of us doing hard things. So just like our body adapts when we work out our muscles, our brain adapts. We have brain plasticity. So when they do MRIs and functional MRIs, they start seeing the brain change, making you stronger to be able to do hard things. So that's when I say anyone can build bravery. I'm saying it literally. You got to start off small, do the little thing that scares you a little, And then you do that and you're like, wow, I did that. Okay, now what's the next thing? So I want people to always be a little scared. I always want them always like just getting on, dancing on the edge of their comfort zone, because their capacity will grow over time. And then they feel like Superwoman or Superman. Like they start feeling like I can do anything. It's amazing.
Jill, do you think so? In order to get to that point, because I completely agree with everything that you're saying, if you don't exercise that bravery muscle, for lack of a better word, it gives you an excuse to be lazy and do nothing. Because being lazy and do nothing, I mean, you're alive, right? You're taking care of business. You wake up in the morning, you have this small little life, and you don't go outside your comfort zone, and you're safe. But and it gives you an excuse to be that way. Do you think to motivate oneself to want to be uncomfortable, which is a hard, it's hard to kick your own butt. Do you think, for example, that your first experience in the Marines, do you think that guy was trying to get you to want to be brave as opposed to trying to push you down and get you to leave the military? Like, was that sort of a reverse psychology move on you?
I don't know. I've always wondered that. Like, what was his intent? And I wanted the moment where after I was commissioned and I was serving, I like run into him and I salute him and say, "It's me," right? And I never had that moment. Darn it. But a couple of things that you, number one is sometimes when someone tells us like, "You are not enough, you'll never be able to do it," there people take it one of two ways. Some people believe it. And then it can have a devastating effect on them. For me, you tell me I can't do something. Oh, ho. Like now I am on a freaking mission. You tell me I can't do something. So for him, I actually appreciated it because there were so many moments that I did want to quit, and seeing his face motivated. So that did drive me. And that's one of the things that I teach my clients. I mainly work in organizations. So I go into organizations and we work on the cognitive side of peak performance and helping people not only perform at their best and accomplish their goals and be the most successful, but really to make them the happiest. And, this is what we focus on is like, what are the thoughts inside of your head? And if someone tells you that I don't think you could be a great leader or something like that, you have a choice right there. You don't have to allow that to come into your mind. Like, you've got to decide what dialogue you have inside of your head. So, I mean, not that we have time in the show, but we do spend a lot of time on the cognitive side. We don't have to believe that we're an awesome leader if we have no leadership experience, for example, but we have to believe that it's possible for us to develop the skills to be able to do anything. And that's where I use the power of yet. Like, I don't know how to be a great leader now, but I could. So I'm just not a great leader yet. And that word yet, it just opens the door just a sliver to go, it's possible. And if it's possible, then it's like, well, what would I need to do in order to be able to be a great leader? I got to learn, I got to work hard, right? So yeah, on the mindset piece, we've got to believe it's possible. You also said something about motivation.
Yeah,
How
you
do
gotta
people
want it.
motivate? All right, so I don't know if this is what you guys want to hear, but motivation is completely overrated. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. So now, first of all, I do want people to like look at their current life and then think about the life that they want to have that's a little bit different. And I want them to be motivated for that because you got to be a little bit uncomfortable in your current state and want something more. So that can be a positive motivator. You need to have a vision for what you want to do, right? So that can be a motivator. But what I'm talking about in terms of motivation that becomes very dangerous, let's say someone says, like, I want arms like Jana. So I want arms like Jana, and I don't want my flappy arms. That is my goal, right? And I'm kind of dissatisfied with my current state, and I'm motivated because I want to look like her. All right, so that's my motivation. But what happens tomorrow morning when the alarm goes off to go to the gym? People are like, I just don't feel motivated to go to the gym. Like, I don't, I tell my audiences, don't wait until you feel inspired or motivated to take action. And here's a little psychological trick of saying, I want you to consider what does your 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. self want you to do in this moment? What's your future self going to be happy with? So don't think about what you feel like doing, what's going to make you happy in the moment, which is stay in bed and be lazy. But the real self-care is not just listening to like what's going to make you comfortable and happy now. It's thinking about what does your future self want to do. So motivation in the moment, like, I don't care if you feel motivated in the morning. Real self-care is keeping a promise to yourself. Be kind to yourself. So self-care, the kindest thing you can do to yourself is to keep promises. And, you know, you want to set goals that are realistic. Like, I want arms like Jana. So I'm going to set a goal that I'm going to go into the gym 3 days a week. And when that alarm goes off, I'm going to get my butt into the gym. So when you keep promises to yourself, then your self-esteem goes up and you love yourself more, right? So yes, I want people to be motivated to accomplish goals. I want them to set goals, but sometimes the day in, day out, if you wait until you feel ready or motivated, then you're probably not going to take action. You are what you consistently do. So you've got to focus more on what are the actions I need to take to get to the goal, and think about how happy you're going to be in the future when you keep the promise to yourself. Does that make sense on motivation?
100%.
It does.
100%. Jill, I remember there was I don't remember who said it. There was a quote I shared with Jana one time, and then she subsequently lost and kept off 25 pounds. I'm a little upset with that. Anyway, discipline is choosing what you want most over what you want now. Number one, I just wanted to share that with you. But my question for you is, and this is going way too fast, so we just might have to have you come back if you're willing to play with us again. Do you think what we went through with COVID caused many people to live smaller because our social, everything about our lives shrank?
Shrunk.
Do you think that had an effect on people's bravery?
Yeah, especially I think in social bravery for so many people, the isolation, like the biggest fear that most people have is not the physical stuff. Like, I just jumped out of a plane last week to celebrate my book, right? Because that's a physical thing. Hmm. The fear that most people have is fear of rejection. It's usually social fear. So I think the isolation that so many people went through, especially our younger generation, it absolutely stunted their growth socially, and now it's harder for them to connect. And I've seen it. In fact, Jonathan Haidt, who wrote a book called The Anxious Generation, he's like that. I mean,
oh, I want to have him on the show.
Oh, I can try and connect you. I'll try. but yes, I absolutely think so. So when people are just like sitting in their rooms, right, and they're no longer having to socialize, and now they've been in the safe bubble and haven't had to like have a conversation. So many young people like have a hard time just going up and starting a conversation with people. It's crazy. And it's because we've allowed them to not have to do that. So this is why we have so many kids that have anxiety and depression now, because of the disconnection, and they're so scared. And we as parents, I can say this myself too, because I'm a parent, I've done this. Sometimes you just want to make your kid feel good. So you just remove the challenge and you're like, oh, don't go to school. You're really scared to go to school and sit at lunch with, you know, strangers. So, oh, I'll just call you out. Right. I've done that. And I'm the bravery expert. Right. So I know. So, you know, anytime we seek comfort for ourselves or the people we lead at work or for our kids, we are telling them, I don't believe you can handle it. And that's not good lead. It's not good self-leadership. It's not good leadership at work. Instead, what we should do is say, I understand it's really scary, but I'm going to lovingly support your success in overcoming the fear. That is what we need to be doing for ourselves, for self-love, for the people we lead at work, and to lead our families.
Everyone could you also to- just, could you just say, stop being a wuss? Could you do
stop
that?
Stop being a coward. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Jill, we absolutely have to have you back here again. We are wrapping up here with Jill Shulman. She is the author of The Bravery Effect, a parable teaching the science of conquering fear, achieving more, and living life to the fullest. This book can benefit so many people. And I also feel you've written it as a story. It follows a character through, you teach these scientific methods, these things has a capacity to change people's lives, but you do it through the story of a main character. I think teenagers, college students, I think anybody who could benefit from more confidence and wanting to live a fuller, more rewarding life could benefit from this book. I'm just absolutely loving you and loving this book. So Thank you for taking the time to join us and all the love and effort and wisdom you've put into this book. If people wanted to reach out to you to have them come to their company or learn more about you or buy your book, how do they do that?
My website's the best place to go, and I've got some freebies on there for your audience. So just my website is just my name. So it's Jill Shulman. First name's really hard to spell, J-I-L-L, but Shulman's a little harder. S-C-H-U-L-M-A-N. If you go to my website, anyone can contact me if they're interested in having me speak to their organization. And every time I travel for like a paid gig, I try to volunteer and do it, you know, for not-for-profits as well. So to reach out to me, I'd love to come and share. But in addition, I have a free bravery assessment and a free bravery blueprint. So people can just like, the assessment takes like 3 minutes, and then they get this free bravery blueprint that gives them a worksheet to really take them through like what is something they want. And then there's like some cognitive reframing, how to take steps on shaky knees, and then how to use the social. So everything that's in the book, I've just got a little condensed version because I want as many people to just learn how to be brave. So I just have this as a freebie. Like I want anyone that you can think of, just please like take it, you know, take this free bravery blueprint, share it with them so they can start living a happier, more fulfilling life.
Jill, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're going to help a lot of people.
Yes, thank you very, very much there, Jill. Much, much appreciated. And we are not done yet with the show. We still got segment number 3 on the way. And just to let you all know, I am finally going to get my butt in gear. I've been inspired because I, too, want to have arms like Jonna. We'll be right back with Jonna Spillmore, Carol Pesci, and Happy Hour. So please come back with us and be ready to work.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour. It's Jonna Spillmore. It is Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, Frankenberry.
Yeah, well, our bravery expert, Jill Shulman, she was way cool.
That was great.
That singular theory could transform a person's life.
Completely. If you can motivate somebody to get off their butt and be brave, it's not easy making that first leap. The one thing I wanted to ask her about, because I think I've noticed it in my own life, is if you can motivate somebody to get off their duff and do something, the second you see one little hint of evidence that what you're doing is working, there is your motivation. If you didn't have it to get started when she was talking about motivation's overrated, once you start doing the thing and you see evidence, you want to keep doing the thing. So I promise people that will happen if you just take the chance.
Yeah, like the first cat you rescued, that was hard. You know, that was scary. You didn't know what you were doing. And now that you're up to cat number what?
What? Yeah. I mean, now you collect them like Beanie Babies back in the 80s.
I can't hear you because my biceps are in the way of my ear holes. That's right. If only I could hear you with these arms.
That's
awesome.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And my sinus is being so stuffed up, it's reached my ears.
Yeah, practically. So, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jill was great. I would love to have her back.
Before we go, can I do a shameless plug?
Yeah,
sure. Okay.
So you guys know that I recently became a contributor on a true crime podcast called MK True Crime, and it is gaining popularity as we speak. It's only a month old, but there's 26,000 subscribers, but we need more. So I was hoping that people could go to MK True Crime and subscribe and listen to our episodes. And like, the good news is, even though the episodes are like an hour long, our production team chops them up into bite-sized pieces for those like me who might not have a full hour to listen, or you know, you might start and stop. So you can listen to various parts of the show, which is really convenient, that are smaller. But if people could subscribe, that would be great. And I also want to tell us three that I'm allowed to swear on that podcast. And I got to tell you, it is freeing. Yeah, it is freeing, you guys. If ever we're in that position,
how liberating.
Get away with it. Yeah, it's great. It's like therapy. So.
Finally. Okay, cool. I'll subscribe.
Okie doke. That sounds good. Yes, I will check it out as well. And for Jill Shulman, again, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us about bravery and the bravery effect. And for Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci, I am this guy, and I might even sleep with my head out from under the covers tonight. Thank you, Jill Shulman. You all have a good week, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM. Yeah.